Strange name for a sermon, Macedonian Fun. But I was thinking when I worked on the title and the text, I was thinking about something I read last week. I don't know if you remember this lady, but she was her name was Eleanor Chestnut. Do you remember? And she went as a missionary, medical missionary to China. And she was the one who, you know, the fellow's leg wasn't healing up after she amputated it. And so she took her own skin and did the graft. And then the missionary board got on her because she was supposed to get, she lived on $1.50 a month so she could use the rest of her salary to buy bricks. Do you remember this? For the hospital. And they got on her case. And she said she refused the sum, saying, "It will spoil all my fun." How about that? Fun. She was having fun taking grafts off herself and giving her salary to build a medical facility. She used to have to do surgery in the bathroom. I mean, it was just, I mean, she was having fun. Now, when I think of fun, I guess I think of something really kind of frivolous, like go to a fun house at a fair. By the way, those are some of the scariest places on earth, fun houses. So where's the fun in that? But maybe Chuck E. Cheese and whack-a-mole and things like that. I don't know. Fun. It seems light, but she was having fun. I submit to you that these Macedonians we're going to look at today were having some fun. And it wasn't as though, and we're going to talk about giving. I had to cloak this because they put Macedonian giving. You might not have come today. No, I'm kidding. But Macedonian fun. They were having the time of their lives. And so we commend them to you. And we're going to read the text. Let's stand. It's a short passage. Usually we go to several slides. But here is Paul bragging on a church. Incidentally, this church is, you know, when you go up in Greece, you've got the Sparta area, the Peloponnese, and you've got Athens, and you go up, and then you kind of loop over, and you get to Turkey. But way up in the top is Macedonia. And the main city there was Philippi, you know, so named for Philip of Macedonia, who was the daddy of Alexander the Great. All right, so they're up there, and the Philippians are the Macedonians. So this is also Philippian giving. So let's read this together. "And now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. In the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. For I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability, entirely on their own. They urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the Lord's people. And they exceeded our expectations. They gave themselves, first of all, to the Lord, and then, by the will of God, also to us." So that's the passage. Be seated, if you will. And I have broken that into 12 parts to show the characteristics of Macedonian giving. And we're going to track quickly through this, and I hope that as Paul commended this to the Corinthians, that he'll commend it to you, using me to some extent. This is tricky. You start with the first one. I could lose you on this one, but bear with me. It's manly. It says, brothers. That's how it starts. Now, the new NIV is helping you to say it's not just men. It's brothers and sisters, but most old translations just do Adelphoi, like Philadelphia, city of brotherly love. Well, it does apply to women as well, so don't just check out women, but it does apply to men. And so at least, if not exclusively, it's a manly type of giving. Now, we took a missionary trip, the Midwestern faculty, we got on some buses, and we went up through kind of our parish up into the Dakotas, and we stopped at a place near Wounded Knee. You remember Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, where they had a massacre up there. But we went to a place, a mission house in Sharp's Corner, near Porcupine and pretty close to toward Mount Rushmore, up in that area, right? Badlands and so forth. Anyway, we stopped there and talked to these missionaries on a pretty lonely place. And we talked about the challenge they had, and they said that one of the biggest challenges we have up here on the Pine Ridge Reservation is having men, laymen, in the church who stand up. The women will come, but the men will say, well, that's women's work, you know, or that's the white man's religion or something like that. And he says the women keep the church going. And if we could get just one or two great men, laymen, that would be great. So thank God for the contribution of the church, of women in the church. But let me say this. Men should take the leadership in this kind of Macedonian giving. The wife says, no, we really need to tithe. We really need to do that. All right, whatever. You know, write the check. No, he ought to be the one who says, this is what we do as for me and my house. And thank God you're keeping track of this. Yes, I mean, what a wonderful thing it is when they're in sync with one another. If on the remote chance he's the one who has the zeal to give, and she says, well, we just can't afford it, we just can't do that, then listen, man up. You're in charge. And say, as for me and my house, we're going to give. So at the very least, the men ought to be really on board with this. And what a blessed thing it is to have a wife that's just in sync here. And if one of us forgets, the other steps up. It's just a joy to be excited about giving. It's celebratable. I don't even know if that's a word. Celebrational or something like that. But anyway, how about this? To celebrate a church. Now, I got to do that. Actually, we had a little publication called the Southern Baptist Celebrator. But one of my fun things as editor of this magazine was to just highlight churches. This is one of my favorite. It's called First Southern Baptist Church, Casper, Wyoming. Here's little Casper. Casper started churches that started churches that started churches that started churches. So they started this church, and from that, this came, this came, this came, this came. And from this one church, these churches issued. Wowzer. Hey, Southern Baptist, you know, send it out to whatever, 75,000 people. Like, look at this church. And so he's lifted up this church. By the way, there are a couple of others. I just got such a kick out of this. These were the missionaries who were martyred as of the time we published this. Now, others were killed in shipwrecks and car accidents and malaria and so forth, but these are the ones who were actually murdered. Actually, the list is much bigger now. We lost them in northern Iraq. We lost them in Yemen and so forth. But at the time, and we think, they put their lives on the line, Southern Baptist missionaries. In another issue, we talked about the number of short-term. Actually, Henderson figured into this one. We have these vans representing the 62,738 volunteers who did home mission work, and it would take an hour and 45 minutes for the vans to pass if you load 10 to a van going the speed limit. That many volunteers in a year. And then we had 10,265 overseas volunteers, and it would take 21 Boeing 747s to carry them. Actually, you can look in the little mirror here, and there are people here from Henderson in one of these. But how about that? Just people doing missions. I have one more. This is really kind of a funny one. We decided to find the churches closest to major league stadiums or pro stadiums. And so, well, here's a guy from Covington, Kentucky, at that time, Riverfront Stadium. But here's a fella close. It's First Baptist Church, Orchard Park, New York, near the Buffalo Bills Stadium. This is Michael McCoy. Here is Eric Fry, First Southern Baptist Church, Salt Lake City, near the Delta Center. And so we were saying, look, not everybody's in the comfort zone of Dixie. There are people who are out there getting it done, not in the Bible Belt. So we just love to celebrate. And listen, it's a great thing to celebrate churches that are cooking. And this church is cooking, the Macedonian church. It's divine. Isn't this odd? When I first read this, I thought I read it wrong. It says, let me tell you about the grace that God has given the churches. I thought it would read, let me tell you about the grace that the churches have exhibited, right? The grace of giving. But it's the grace he gave them. In other words, he gets all the credit. If it weren't for the grace of God, your heart would have no interest in giving to the church. I read somewhere about a year ago that if you feed a cat chocolate, you'll have a very bad experience. Tempting, I have to say. I'm a dog person. But, no, I'm sorry. But cats can't handle chocolate. And if you say to a person, hey, let's take up an offering for the work of the church in the world. Look, if you care about that at all, if there's anything that flutters there, it's because God put the flutter there. You see? So it's not as though, man, we're the tallest tree in the forest and we're the meanest tiger in the jungle. We're given like, no, he gave you that heart. You know, people who are passing by, maybe just taking their kids in the park or getting a coffee and reading the New York Times, doing the crossword puzzle. It's not as though they're fighting as they go by the church. Oh, I want to go into church and hear sermons and sing praises and hear testimony from the pulpit committee and stuff. Man, no, keep your hands on the wheel, honey. We got to go and resist it, you know. They're not fighting anything. They don't have a heart to be here. If you have a heart to be here, he gave you that heart. So it is the grace. God gets the credit for what they did. It's human. Why would I say that? Well, the Macedonian churches. Well, if you read Philippians, the church to the people in Macedonia, you'll find that they were not Camelot, okay? You might think, oh, this Macedonian church, it's just like Camelot, sort of floating up in the clouds, and wow, we're just down here in Kentucky. We can't imagine. No, listen, this church had real problems. When he wrote to the Philippians, when Paul did, there are a couple of ladies, could have been men, but they're named Euodia and Syntyche, and they were at it in some kind of little head-butting power thing. I don't know what they were into. And so Paul said, okay, listen. This is a paraphrase, Philippians 2, 5 to 11. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who did not consider his heavenly prerogative something to be clung to or grasped, but he was actually found in the form of a servant. I mean, found in the likeness of a man, and being of the appearance of the man, he emptied himself. He humbled himself, and he was obedient unto the cross, death even on the cross. And thus he humbled himself, and what did God do? He highly exalted him and gave him the name that is above every name, in heaven, on earth, and below the earth. And that the name of Jesus, every knee will bow and every tongue confess to the glory of God the Father. He said, this is what you're supposed to do. Knock it off. Have Christ's mind, not have like this mind, like, hey, who's in charge? This is my turf. So these are just church people. Perhaps they were Baptists. You know, you have it split, and then you have the Harmony Baptist Church is the new one. I mean, this is kind of, you know, Little Hope Baptist Church and No Hope Baptist Church or what have you. These are just folks, but God elevated them and made them extraordinary. They're just human like us. They were tempered out of the most severe trial, it says. I mean, you'd think that if they were in a fix, then they would hunker down and be kind of miserly till things got, but no, they were tempered. Look, when I was dating my wife, that's before we kissed dating goodbye, by the way, before you read that book. I remember once we were on an outing for our little college, and they had a tennis court, and I was on the tennis team. I wasn't great. I mean, it was Ouachita Baptist. We didn't, you know, but we knew how to hold the racket. And at any rate, she said, oh, let's play tennis with the little her girlfriends and their victim boyfriends or something. So we're out there, and, you know, we're kind of holding the racket like this. And, you know, you kind of go like, bink, you know, and then you giggle. And it goes over the fence, and just like, oh, wasn't that funny? Throw us the ball. So, okay, it was fun. It worked. She married me. All right, so good. Just note to young people. But look, in tennis, you hit like this. And you hit it like this, and you try to hit it where people aren't and try to score points. It's combat. And again, I'm so grateful that we did that as we did it. But it was social tennis. And some people think of church as like social tennis. It's just like we run up here and we pat and like, oh, and the world claps. Oh, that's so good, you church people. You're so precious. And we go over here like thinking like that. Hey, boom. Church is serious competition with the devil and the world. We're in a war. And I don't mean we use the means of war to like crush people. There are other religions that do that, that use the sword. No, as we read last week, we seek to persuade men by our words and our example. And so these guys were tempered. They knew this wasn't pity pat. This was serious business. So pony up. Now, it was joyful. You know, I may have mentioned this lady before, but one of the dearest ladies, I saw her a couple of years ago when I was back through there, in our church in Arkansas, was named Sudi Garner. Interesting name. Sudi married foolishly in World War II, married a sailor. I could have told her, stick with the Army, but married a sailor. It fell apart. So she's a divorcee in her early 20s. Then she marries a barber named Red, big redheaded guy, nice guy, died of a heart attack before long. So she's a divorcee and a widow. And then she contracted breast cancer and had a double mastectomy. And then she didn't have much income, so it's pretty lean if you don't have insurance and this and that and the like. So she is a divorcee, a widow, a cancer victim, living on a tough income. She was also, I think, the most joyful person in our church. We went down, took her to Brazil, and we're witnessing, and she's logging in all the testimonies. And then we come back, and she started the prayer ministry of our church. And I'd get these little prayergrams even after I moved up to Indiana, and I'd practically have to use oven mitts to take them out of the envelope for the glory. Been praying for you. And when the youth choir, the kids would sing at Christmas, you could just hear Sue. She'd go, "Oh, Jesus." And she meant it in a good way, you know. And I found myself riding along through Indiana one day, and I heard this thing on the, maybe it was second chapter of Acts, singing the Easter song or something. And I just go, "Oh, Jesus." And I thought, "Where'd I get that, Sudie?" She was just full of joy. It's crazy. But God was up to something, and she was in on it, and she knew it, and you had to practically tether her. They had joy even though they were in a severe trial. And it overflowed in their giving. They were sacrificial. Extreme poverty. Well, you know how that works. Like, hey, you know, we were given freely and this and that. We gave to Lottie Moon last year, but hey, things have been tough. You know, we've had the virus, we've had this and that. And so this year we'll just take a break. God will understand. And I'm sure he does. But, you know, they said that didn't stop us. We're going to give out of our poverty. Did you know, by the way, they've done studies to show that poorer churches and poorer people give a higher percentage of their income than, you know, like the standard might be nationwide 2%, and they're more inclined to give 4% or something. Like, what a knuckleheads. You don't have the money. No, they got another agenda, you see. And so, well, I don't want to slander some folks here, but I had a prof in college. I will not name the college or the town, but it could have been in the region of Southwest Arkansas with the initials Ouachita Baptist University. And I had a prof once. Somehow we got to talking about tithing. I don't know what it was. I think it was in a class on existentialism, of all things. And we got to talking about tithing, and he said, "Well, I don't tithe because if I worked at the state school across the ravine there, I would make more, so by teaching here, that's my tithe." That's snappy. You know, like, such a deal. I'll just insult another professor. Right on the next one, generous, welled up in rich generosity. I had a prof, I won't name, I shouldn't have done Ouachita, but Ouachita's dear, and it's a wonderful place. This other one may have been in the Chicago area where I was teaching. And a professor said, when we built a study on our home, then since we give to Christian workers elsewhere, I'm a Christian worker, and sometimes our money enables them to do things, so by building the study, that will be my contribution to the church. You know, it's kind of like they're saying, "Hey, I got a coupon here." You know, I know that, like, generally serious and praise Christians and they're giving and stuff do this and that, but I got to get out of jail free card. I got a coupon here. I'll build myself study. Look, when you're generous, you're like generous to others. I mean, he was particularly generous to himself, and he was playing games. And the guy said, "Look, yeah, I mean, look, people can disagree over gross and this and where you tithe Christmas gifts and whether this. I mean, yeah, there are all kinds of interesting things in this. But these guys said, look, we're just going to give. You guys sort it out. We're in the business of giving sacrificially and generously." And that spirit just welled up. That's why they're in the Bible. That's not why the guys are like looking for coupons to get out of giving. Discounts aren't in the Bible and praised in the same way. Are they in the Bible, but they're in the Bible in other ways, I guess you could say. But this is Macedonian stuff. Have I offended you yet? Here, stick with me. Okay, foolish. Okay, so now they gave out of their poverty and so forth, and now they're going to give more. They're just really stupid, you know? Come on, man. Take a course in personal finance. Get it together. What was that about? Look, I think of a guy. This isn't a make-believe name. Jack Smith, okay, real name. Jack Smith was in the Home Mission Board doing some evangelism training. I think he wrote Friends for Life, and there are a variety of things. I think he worked on an evangelism technique involving analysis of the soils, the parable of the soils. Remarkable guy. He was pastor of a big old church in Alabama, Sweet Home, Alabama, you know? And he thought, well, a good church does missions. So they paired up, I think, with Pennsylvania, South Jersey, and he goes up to Johnstown, Pennsylvania. You know where they had that big flood, the Johnstown flood, where the dam broke and the swept down through the town? I mean, they cleaned up by this time, but he's up there. There was no church in Johnstown, but the director of missions came over and said, and they had a couple of couples there who were interested in maybe belonging to it if they got it going. So he's in the house talking to them, and they're sitting on the couches, and the DOM's talking to him, and they said, hey, could you preach us a Southern Baptist sermon? We hadn't heard one in years. Now, I don't know what that would be. I mean, I guess this is one, but, you know, they're all kinds. And he said, well, yeah. He kind of rummaged around his Bible and found one that he preached recently, and he said, you mean just right here? And yeah. So they just sat there, listened to him preach, and they kind of talked a little bit. He smiled. There's a short version, and he smiled and they said, we've talked about it. We call you as our pastor. Yeah. I said, oh, you mean to pastor here? Yeah, yeah. We think God laid search committee. This is how it's done, by the way. And so call you as our pastor. And so he said, well, that's real nice, you know, but I'll appreciate it. We'll kind of hold the rope as someone goes down in darkness to Johnstown, Pennsylvania, and, you know, we're this and that. And he was on the cover of the Alabama paper and all this grandeur and all that. And as he's driving back, he said, Lord, just please help this church. And says, you know, find some fool from seminary. No, I mean, he just Lord, help him. And God said, no, you didn't listen. I called you. He got back. He called his deacons together. He said, guys, I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm going to have to leave you and go pastor someplace. I don't quite know and how. And one deacon stood up and he said, no, pastor, you're not leaving us. We're sending you. And they got behind it and they funded him. That's stupid. Go to one of those job link sort of things. Put your, that's not, that. It's God's, God makes you do stupid things sometimes. Like these people. They not only gave according to their ability out of their poverty and stress, but they gave beyond their ability. Knuckleheads for Christ. Fools for Christ. Now, I'm not saying God will call you to do that. He calls some people to be very, very wealthy and to be philanthropists. I mean, they're individual callings. But they weren't calculating according to just the world's smarts. Natural, entirely on their own. He just says entirely on their own. You know the old story of the pastor, he goes down to the train station every day or goes down below the big crossing here on across the Ohio, and he every day at noon, he's just watching the train, eating a sandwich, and they say, what in the world are you doing? Is this kind of a working out of a desire to move on down the line? It's kind of a little Freudian thing or something. He said, no, it's the only thing that comes through town. I don't have to push, and I just like to look at it. You get this thing, I got to push this, I got to promote this, we got to stir this up and so forth, and it's good stuff. But he says, I didn't even push this. They just heard about it. Boom. What is that about? It was natural. It welled up. It wasn't like beaten out of them, you know? Insistent. Now, this gets crazy. They urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of giving. I mean, can you imagine if I leave today and, you know, Marty over here, our preacher tonight, grabs my leg and he said, no, take more of my money. No, Marty, keep your money. What is this? Pleading to give an offering? But I think of my father-in-law, Reuben South, who was president of the Arkansas Convention on the executive committee of the SBC. I was starving at Vanderbilt. I mean, for us, we would plan weeks, McDonald's, with cheese, without cheese, check the budget, you know, this kind of deal. He would come to town, take us out to eat steak. It was at Brass Rail Stables in Printer's Alley. Steaks, and then steak and ale, the Kensington cut. I don't even know if steak and ale exists anymore. But there we were, impoverished, eating steak. And what I would say at the end is like, Reuben, let me get this. Yeah, like Hawk the Volkswagen Bug, like please, God, don't let him say yes, you know, because I'll have to, who knows, Sharon will take in ironing or something. But he would say, no, 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 son, you know, thank you, okay. Actually, I got a job later, you know, and I'm working, and we went out to Glorieta, we were coming back, we're through Oklahoma City, we go in this restaurant, and I guess probably for the 50th time, says, Reuben, let me get this, and he says, well, thanks. Whoa, what is that? And I meant it by that time. Because after a while, I'm starting to think, hey, you don't think I can do this? I mean, you get all the thrill of the giving. Why can't I get in on this a little bit? Man, I walked up to that cash register, you know, there with me, you know, this kind of thing. But these people are saying, look, when we may not look like much, but when the role of faithful, exemplary churches is called, we want to be there. We want to be standing tall. Paul, don't patronize us. Because of Christ, we're really something. Not because we're great in ourselves. Surprising, did not do as we expected. Those who've been in the ministry for any time are no disappointment. You know, man, that guy got baptized and he's going in there. Where'd he go a year later? There's a plow sharpening contest in Owensboro and we lost him. Or somebody looked at him cross-eyed and he's never been back, you know. I went to Brazil once. Well, six times. Went to Brazil, and the first time we preached on a Sunday night, and I think something like 30 people came forward at the invitation. Now, I thought, oh, I must have said that wrong. Y'all get back up the aisle here. Obviously, there's not that much response, too. No, they really came, and I thought, well, that was just a flash in the pan. I come back like a year later, and most of those people are in the church, and I think three of them were deacons. It's like, what in the world? It's like you preach the gospel and then someone is taken over by the power of God and their life has changed and they're faithful disciples and you can count on them and it's not like you lean on them and you go through the wall. You know, Southern Baptist has got nearly 15 million members and the FBI can't find half of them. And so you get kind of geared up for disappointment. I'm sorry to say, but it's the truth. But in many cases, though, it's like, wow, it really is something. These people didn't do as we expected. We thought they would be some kind of pitiful case for years. And look at them, they just jumped into the fray. It's surprising. It's worshipful. They gave themselves first to the Lord. It wasn't like, okay, this is the band booster thing and we got the little thermometer and like that, oh, we're going to beat the guys down in Zion or the people over in Owensboro and Paducah and stuff. Come on, bum, bum, bum. No, no, no. They gave themselves to God. When I was a S4, a staff officer in a battalion for logistics, I would deliver food and fuel and ammunition, spare parts and stuff out to the folks in the field. And I would get the support platoon leader and I would get these Mermite containers and all kinds of stuff and give them, make sure they got 2,700 calories a day and all that stuff. We're crashing through the woods. And finally we come upon them in some assembly area and they never said, oh, Captain Coppinger, you are so generous. You're so thoughtful. You're just our good friend, you know? No, I'd better get that food to them because it ain't my food. My job was just to deliver Uncle Sam's food, and if I didn't get it, then I was in the trick bag, as they say. Listen, it's not your stuff, and you give your giving to the Lord. And by the way, you give. And to us, who? The apostles. It's giving to the apostolic thing. Sharon and I took stock of some things we give here and there, and she's given to leukemia, Alzheimer's, Wounded Warrior. I just wrote a check to a guy I ran into in New Hampshire who's running for Senate, and I heard him talk in the library, and I said, I like that guy, so I sent him a little bit yesterday, and we just give to stuff. And that's nice, you know. But how wonderful it is to give to the apostolic causes, to give to the people. I mean, you know, you may cure somebody of leukemia down the line and you may get elected and vote right a couple of times or something like that. That's fine. But what about giving to the very things that God has designed history for the spread of the gospel, for the preaching of the word, for the singing of his glory? And so they gave themselves to the apostles. So Macedonian giving, the kind of giving God brags on, is manly and womanly. It's celebratable, and God does it. It's divinely empowered. It's out of human congregations. It's tempered by trials. It's overflowing in joy. It knows sacrifice. It knows generosity, even to the point of being a little nutty. It's natural. It wells up. It doesn't have to be just beaten out of you or something. It just pleads. It's so insistent. It can actually be surprising to your family, to your leaders. It's worshipful unto God, and it is undergirding the work of the apostles, the teaching of the apostles. Macedonian giving. I went to work for a place once for a boss, and in the course of the meeting, the first year there, one of the old executive assistants there came to me and said, I can't remember the situation, but she said, you know, there are two kinds of people on earth. There are givers and there are takers. And she referred to her boss, said, he's a taker. And there are people who are always looking to get their next thing. And then there are other people who think about, how can I get my act together where I can give myself way more? By the way, you can be wealthy and powerful and be a taker, but it's a lot more fun to be a giver. And they knew that. Well, I started talking about a medical missionary. Let me tell you about another one. This missionary went to China, gave up her life for healing. We understand from Isaiah 53 and other passages, there was another medical missionary, the great physician who came to earth. By his wounds we are healed. He gave up his life for us. And then he rose from the grave. That's our model.